Hello, welcome to Pat Roe Toasty Talks. This is your hosts, Brian and Zona.
Meow.
Say hi, Zona.
Meow.
Okay, Zona has the cat. And today we have a guest, well, a couple of guests on with us today. Yes, quite literally. We have Brian and Kenna from Modern Goldfish. So this is, you want to guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Kenna Covington. I'm an artist and stained glass maker, and I guess co-creator of Modern Goldfish.
I'm Brian Covington, also co-creator of Modern Goldfish. I've taught design for many years and have a master's in industrial design, and bring those skills to the table.
And you make magic wands.
Yes.
We do. We have been making magic wands. Oh my gosh, a little bit of everything for the last and selling at festivals since 2018,
Nice.
and started off with magic wands, and we do gaming gear as well. Brian makes dice jails.
Dice jails.
We do earrings. I make pie show tiles from Avatar, the Last Airbender movie. What was that? We do what?
Stained glass primarily at this
Stained
point. So,
glass
like,
primarily. We have
wait,
actually, it's been
you
up again. So,
mean
the last like four or five shows we've had have been just stained glass.
really?
Yes. And it's, we've just, for the last 3 years, I've been, making stained glass. And little by little, it's been the winner for our sales.
It's been the
And
biggest seller show after show after show
yeah.
and pulling away.
And so
So
I feel like, Wizard Wands and, all of that brought us to where we are and helped us build our audience. And, we have this platform and I start making stained glass. And that's just, it's as an artist, you should evolve and we're evolving. And it's one of those weird things that I was very nervous the first time we did a just glass show because
nervous.
so nervous
Yeah.
because you, I don't know,
It's
we,
all on
what
you.
if we,
Yeah.
what if I've ruined us? What if this doesn't work? And it worked. And I think it's
We set a record for one day sales, is how well it worked.
really nice.
So moving forward,
Which show was it that you did all stained glass?
Art Explosure.
that was Artsplosure.
In
Art
Raleigh.
Explosion? That
Really
doesn't surprise me. That
nice.
doesn't surprise me that that would do well with that crowd. So for
And
those
so I think.
listening, Artsplosure is a art event in Raleigh
Yep.
in May. They have it in May.
It was in May.
May 16th, I think.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we were on the wait list for
Yeah.
that, but we had to back out because we had another event. But we
Well,
went last year and it was spectacular.
It's
yeah.
back to back with the
Okay.
Cheer Wine Festival in Salisbury, and there's another vendor we know that's always trying to get us to do Cheer Wine, which has apparently more people, but I don't know. It's a different vibe, I suspect.
Everybody raves about Cheer Wine Festival.
Yeah.
That's what I hear too.
We've never done cheer wine. We just we hear about it, but we've never done
Our good friend makes cookies, so it's like a radically different business, and I don't know that her numbers would be the same as our numbers, just the different food vendors can sell. Just about people, get more people to
Yeah.
frame more money so that you make, because it's cookies. It's not hard to sell
It's
cookies.
gluten-free
The guy from Granny's
cookies.
Jams is the one who's always telling me to go there.
But I
Yeah.
feel like that's it's a fair. It's a festival. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? It's a county fair. I feel like I
Which
don't
is
think we
cool.
would do well there either. Like
We the
our
wands and stuff have done those a
yeah.
lot, and we did
Yeah.
great at that. This Art Exposure is a juried art show and attached to a market, so the vibe is more art oriented. So I think
Yeah.
that helped kind of a lot.
And those are the spaces that I want to move into.
Right.
Because I mean, we started off doing, small pop-up, monthly markets, and then Comic-Con. Like that's our jam, because when we had to have Brian sitting outside in the summer at a market, and he's like, "Can we just do a Comic-Con that's inside in air conditioning?" And I'm like, "Yeah, oh my gosh, we're nerds." I mean, we were making, Harry Potter wands. And so that was like natural. And I'm looking to find more spaces where people are going to buy art, not just festival. Let's have a good time, bring the family. Nobody's going to pay for anything because everything's free, which I think is a very necessary event for, you know, towns and cities, and I think it's really exciting.
People pay for small things like the wands, or
right.
You know, the lower end wands was, it was, you know, like going to the circus and getting a little spinny, you know, light up LED thing. You just buy a thing from a show. It's cool. It's fun. And you move on.
Right.
But glass lasts forever, really.
Right. I want to make things that people cherish for the rest of their lives, and that I want grandma's mushroom from her kitchen.
And no one wants grandma's old.
How do you convey that to people? Because that's kind of one of the things that is like we struggle with, and a lot of other artists struggle with, is, you know, how do you convey like this kind of handmade thing has more intrinsic value than the little mass-produced thing that you get on Temu or over at, you know, a 5 and 10 store?
Do you want to talk about that?
I don't want to hog the mic, but...
Oh, well, I'll hog the mic the whole time.
Well, what we talked about when we did Magic Wands, it's probably, we have only been doing glass full bore for a little while, but with Magic Wands in particular, that whole vibe, the idea was that we were bringing, they were having an experience. They found this cool little place, like a little corner of Diagon Alley in downtown Raleigh or wherever, and this is the wand that I got there. So it's really like a souvenir of the experience they had at our booth.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Well, and I think that with stained glass, people know what that is.
True.
They know that, you know, it's, most people see stained glass in a church or a synagogue or a house of worship. And so it's very sacred to us as humans, and it makes everything feel special. And, you know, stained glass is not something that you just casually have. You know, you love it, you live with it. But we talk about, we have, you know, on our signage has, you know, handmade everything. And they're like, handmade, these hands made them. But we talk about, you know, what their experience is with stained glass and how we make it. And that I teach classes and, you know, the time that goes into it. For wizard wands, nobody, I would say 50% of people or more had no idea what they were. They'd walk up and say, are these pipes? Are they candles? What are they? And you know,
we even saw that within the wands themselves, because Kenna's wands are a little less clear, being very like fluid and shiny. Like they see my wands and they go, oh, that's wood. I know what that is. And so they're less interested in the wood wands. There are certainly people who did like the wood wands, but Kenna's were always like, what is this? How do you make this? They were just very interested in and didn't know what it was. And that drew them in.
But I think that, like Zona, I've seen you just talk with people when they come to your booth and they're like, oh my gosh, this is magic. Like, because when you can draw or you can make something, and people who don't really normally do that kind of thing, they think that's magical. And so when you start talking to them about what you do and you ask them about, you know, what their kind of art is, and it's just, there's a conversation that happens, and it's, you know, there's... I think there's a, not a trend, but a, people are looking for real, like actual intelligence versus AI now. And so there's definitely a desire for authenticity, mm-hmm. that, you know, people they've been missing out, because, you know, you can buy whatever at Temu or Target or, you know, whatever, but you can't get what I make. We talked a lot about putting our wands on Amazon handmade years ago. Mm-hmm. And we decided no, because you can get anything on Amazon, but you can't get my stuff.
We thought about adding lights to the wands too. And I eventually figured a way I probably could, but it also just made it feel more like a toy and less like a piece of art.
Right.
And it, I mean, they are toys, I guess, but it took something away by putting a battery in it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of communities that we serve. You know, there's the Harry Potter fandom, but there's also the metaphysical community for people practicing metaphysical arts like witchcraft, who are looking for wands. And that's all about energy. And so, like, you can't fake that. You can't buy that. I mean, I guess you can buy it at Temu, and you can use whatever you want. I think your fingers are the best wands that you have. But if you're looking for something else to be an extension of yourself,
who made it matters in that case?
Who made it matters? Absolutely.
So they want you.
Yeah.
But I think like the vinyl resurgence is an example of the physicality. And half the people at Makerspace, where our studio is, are software engineers and programmers and web designers and things like that want something physical. mm-hmm. that reality of a thing. And I know who made, and a lot of this, this is in the fine art world too. They talk about having the story is what they're buying. It's a piece of paper, art, whatever, but the story about how you came to make this piece of art is half of what you're buying, because you're giving them, they can talk about this piece, like, hey, this piece, I got this piece from this guy, he did this and that and the other thing, and he went through all this stuff to make this piece, and this is actually a piece of some special thing or whatever. And they have that story to talk about as much as they have a thing to look at.
Right.
That's one of the things that I push really hard at the markets when I'm talking to people, when they question, like, why is this price so high?
Yeah.
When, you know, I can go to this other place and get something that's laser burned for a quarter of the cost or half the cost. Like, I explain to them that, you know, it's, that's fine. You know, that's what those guys are there for. You can go mm-hmm. buy from them. That, mm-hmm. you know, I'll give you the names of, you know, three different guys that I know who do laser burning, who do a fantastic job for you, if right. that's what you want. But if what you want is something that has a soul to it, if you want something that's going to have somebody who sat there and meticulously worked on this and thought about every detail that went into this, and, you know, came up with every idea on their own, then we're the people for you. And yeah. there are people like that. It's just finding them.
I think one of yeah. the greatest things that I've had of when I've spoken to people is that, like, they'll come and they'll get, like, nose to nose with some of my pieces that are hanging up. And, like, I can see them getting really, 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 really close. And I'm like, you are more than welcome to touch those pieces. No. They are sealed. They are made to be touched. And they're just like, really? I can touch them? I'm like, yes, please.
Yeah. Touch.
They are textured. They are made to be touched. Please touch. And I will, like, take them down and I'll be like, touch this. Touch this right here. It's mm-hmm. textured for a reason. This tree feels like bark. And they're like, whoa, it really does feel like bark. Yeah. Like, yes. I did that for a reason.
Right.
Like, I made a special, I had somebody ask me to do a, he asked me to do a, it was supposed to be similar to a tree of life as a custom order for his son. And he had a specific pattern. And whenever I get a tree, I always put the bark on because I just think it's the coolest thing that I can do.
Yeah.
And it's just this little thing. And I didn't tell him about it. And I was kind of nervous because I was like, well, he didn't say anything. And I hope he doesn't get upset, whatever. And so I just did it. And then I gave it to him. And I was just like, I hope you don't mind, but I did this little Easter egg thing. And I put texture on it. And he was like, I kind of noticed it, but I wasn't sure because I just kind of glanced at it. And I was like, touch it. And he was like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I was in the car and I was just shocked. And he was taking pictures of it in the car. And like, and he's a photographer. He's a professional photographer. Mm-hmm. So he was like taking pictures with his phone. Yeah, Norman.
Okay.
And then he was like, he sent me professional pictures of it. And he was, like, so surprised, and he was, like, so...
Yeah, okay.
Maybe not. But he was, like, really surprised. It was really cool, his reaction to it. Like, I was, like, that's my why. His reaction is my why to what I do.
Well, I think that when people commission a piece, mm-hmm. they can say what they want it to look like, but they don't... They want your work.
That is you the hope. Joy. That
they,
is the joy.
Well, yeah.
You hope. Because, well, we've had people who have micromanaged the heck out of commissions.
You know what? Knock on wood, I'm very grateful that I've only had a very rare occasion where I've had people who have commissioned me and they've micromanaged it. And I'm like, you commissioned me for me
yeah.
for a reason, right?
Absolutely.
So let me be me. You know, like you asked me to do this piece for a reason. Yeah. So let me do what I do. Let me do my half of the magic, right?
Right.
Not just, I don't know, like bring whatever is in your head to life, because I can't do whatever it is in your head because I'm not you, right? Right. And I'm a strong believer in, like, you chose a particular artist because whatever was in you saw something in that artist and mm-hmm. said, I love this artist, and that art, that artist can is going to bring my art, what's in my head, to life exactly how I want it to be.
Yeah.
So let that artist do whatever it is that that artist is going to do. So I've had, like, artists. I love a customer that says, okay, this is my idea. And I'll sit there and I get this look on my face, apparently. And they're just like, oh, I can see the wheels turning in your head. And I'm like, all right, well, this is my idea. And I kind of give them, like, a sketch. And I'm like, I will give you a mock-up. I'll give you, like, three mock-ups because I've got kind of ideas in my head. And I'll give you a mock-up. But this is kind of sort of what I'm going through in my head. And they're like, ooh, I didn't even think about that. And I didn't think about that, but that's a good idea. And I'm like, all right, well, this is what I'm thinking of, and I'll send it to you, and then you tell me what you think. And they're like, oh, wow. And I'm like, yes, this is it. And I'm like, I'm very interactive with my customers. I'm like, I will email you to death. And I tell them that, and I'm like, because once I start burning, there's no turning back.
Right.
And that's very similar. That's very similar to the glass work, right?
Right.
I mean, once you
come up with a design, and once your design is locked in, I mean, and you can always talk to them about changes, but that comes with your contract that you make with them, and you want to keep yourself safe as well as give them what they're looking for.
I mean, do you do contracts?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. It's important. In previous lives.
It depends on the thing. Like, if it's something like another one of the ones we have, or like this, but blue, something like that, it's not a big deal. But the bigger the piece, the more necessary the contract becomes.
Yeah.
Over like a $50 Cardinal, it's not a big deal, but
I think the cry factor. Like the point.
I mean, I feel like there's certain pieces where it's like, okay, it depends on how personalized it is, right?
Yeah.
If it's like, like you said, if it's, well, can you do this, but like in a different color? Well, okay, that's not a big deal, because even if you change your mind, I'll just sell this one, and it's not a big deal. You didn't, I didn't put a name on it.
That's exactly how we did wands.
Big thing, right? Like, I can just sell this. It's not a big deal, right? But if I had to do big changes, or if I had to put a name on it, it's a done deal.
Yeah, if you're doing a pet portrait, they're buying that.
Yeah. And I've told people this. I'm like, and I've stressed it. Once I start burning this, it's a done deal.
Yeah.
So Kenny, you mentioned the makerspace. Now, we've mentioned the makerspace on the podcast before, but I think you guys can speak with more authority. I know, Kenny, you spend a lot of time there. Talk a little bit about what the makerspace is.
So the makerspace is wonderful. I love it. It's here in Charlotte in Plaza Midwood. There's plenty of parking because if you are listening and you're from Charlotte, you understand that I don't go a lot to NoDa or South End because there's not a lot of places to park. So for me, parking is really huge. But
plus, they closed down Raining Donuts in NoDa, which
they did?
Heartbreaking. So now I'm protesting going to NoDa.
We just dug into NoDa.
Yeah. We went to NoDa back in
was NoDa.
In the 90s.
Back when it was just
when it was just North Davidson.
I had to lie to my mother to tell her I was going somewhere else so I could go read poetry. And this guy, that's where, that's a long time ago for us.
Where were you reading poetry over there?
At St. Ruby's. It was a coffee house, tea house. And what was that?
It was an empty house.
It was an empty house, but it was on Davidson, Davidson.
It wasn't like abandoned or anything. Clearly it was a home that was being used as a business. And there was just like, furniture in it and whatnot.
That sounds very, very authentic.
It was very cool.
Artsy. As one of my friends passed me a post note that said, she's perfect for you. Don't let her get away.
Aww, clearly.
And that was 30 years ago, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys have been together for 30 years?
30 years. I was a child bride. But yeah, 30 years. But so Makerspace, Plenty of Parking, it's like a gym membership for makers. So if you know, are into pottery or stained glass or woodworking, leatherworking, 3D printing,
blacksmithing, ham radio, lasers, leatherworking.
Oh my gosh, what else? There's so much else.
Metalwork. Like
fiber art, sewing. There's so much.
Circuitry, they do. They have we did a soldering class there.
Yes.
For electronics?
Yeah.
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 Cool. Well, you soldered with me.
I did. I did. We did solder with you, but not to solder electronics.
No.
It's far much funner.
Point. Right. So, so basically there's different sections of Makerspace. It's you pay a
flat rate
for your family. So it's $50 and that covers your family. And for me, that's Brian and I, our son and our mother, Brian's mom, my mother-in-law. And you have 24/7 access to come to the space and do what it is that you want to do. They do ask that you take a class or get checked out in a different any department that you want to work in, just because we want to make sure you're not going to cut your hand off.
And that you know how to use the tools.
Right.
Some are more challenging than others, but you know, like if you never used a laser before, you should probably take the classes to understand how that whole thing works. And
I think for the woodworking, they actually have two classes.
They do, yeah.
Well, you can't chop your hand off with most things except woodworking, so.
Yeah, they made it two classes now, which is good.
We all pay, and then, like, I rent my studio there. My actual studio is at Makerspace. All that money goes into the pot that funds for everybody. And if one person is breaking, you know, triggering the saw stop, that's not really fair to charge everybody for replacing that. But I think it's one of the most beautiful places that, you know, we've got in Charlotte, because you can come and there's people who heal broken hearts there, who buffer between work and home, who are working through recovery, who are running a business, or who are just
retired
and just doing things. I know people who are just picking up hobbies and trying
people new straight things out of college who are coming in there and just trying to learn, like figure out life, like figure out what they're going to do with their life.
Being a guy that had moved for the summer to stay with his mom and was just from San Francisco and was just needed something to do, a place to go be. And he signed up Makerspace.
It's wonderful. And the thing that I wasn't really like, I had an idea of, but I wasn't sure how it would work out, is just the community of people that spend time there. It's like in the stained glass lab, these are friends now and they've taken class. I teach classes at Makerspace and that's where I'm doing most of my stained glass. And now all my friends are there doing stained glass with me. It's really cool.
As someone who's not as outgoing as, I'm sorry.
No, I just said we did a stained glass class with you. It was
It was so much fun. Mm.
As the less outgoing member of the couple, the nice thing about it is like I've met a bunch of people that I met a guy recently. I was at the laser station waiting on him to finish doing what he was doing, and so rather than just like go mingle, you know this person is doing laser stuff. What are you doing? What are you working on? Oh, cool. Have you tried this? And so you have something in common is the machine you're both waiting on or working with or doing. So if you're in the leather shop or pottery or whatever, you have that activity in common, at least, or interest, if not activity, talk about. So it sort of fosters communal, you know, conversations about that particular topic that you're working with at that day, even if you've never done it before.
One of my favorite stories about the Makerspace is we were there and we were using a planer. We were trying to level out some wood, and we just kind of kept feeding it through, and this wood was not level. And because it was not level on both sides, we kept putting it through the planer and it kept coming out crooked still. And the guy comes over and he's just like, have you tried this? And he puts a shim underneath it and then he takes a pencil and he draws on it. And he's like, just keep putting it through until there's no more pencil marks. And then he flips it over and he puts the shim on the other side and then he flips it over one more time and it came out perfect. And it was just one of those things where like if you're doing that in your workshop at home, you buy all the tools and you do it in your workshop at home, you're never going to figure that out if you don't know that you're even doing something wrong, right?
Right.
Whereas
right.
somebody who's experienced, who a lot of these people who are in the makerspace do have a lot of experience, it's like they immediately see red flags when, you know, somebody who doesn't know what they're doing is, you know, needs a little, little help.
I don't even know if I would say it was a red flag. It was just like I'd seen him before because I used to go over to the makerspace all the time to plane down stuff. I mean, one of the things that I love the most about the makerspace is like, it has the machinery that like we can't afford. We don't right. have the space for, we don't have the electricity. Like we're not set up for like the big planers, the saw stocks. We just don't have the space for it. We don't have the money for it. We just don't have it, right? But I can go, we can pay the monthly fee for it and go there and just, and handle what we have to, mm-hmm. right? And we used to go over there all the time and I'd bring over stacks and stacks of wood and I would cut it down and I would plane it there and I would sand it down and take care of business while I was there. And sometimes, you know, me and you would go there. And I remember that guy, I'd seen him before and he would come over and we would chat sometimes and I'd watch him. Like, I'd watch him do stuff with whatever it was that he was working on, and I'm nosy as hell. So I would sit there and I'd watch, and I think one thing I love to do is I love to watch other makers make things. One, because I'm nosy, but that's how I learn. I absorb things like a sponge just by watching.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm super fascinated by that. I love watching other creators create. Because I just think that's my YouTube right there.
I was going to say that's why YouTube's so
my YouTube. Like I could just sit there and just I don't need to watch like other stuff. I could just you know what I mean? Like I love sitting there and just watching that kind of stuff. So I will sit there and watch them. And if I have questions, it's nice because I could just be like, hey, excuse me, why did you do that? Or what is that? Why did you do blank and whatever? And most of the time, they answer. There are some people that are just, there's some guys that kind of look at me like, why is she asking me questions? Sometimes, but
most of the time, people are pretty.
Sometimes they kind of give me a look, but sometimes they see me sitting there with stuff, and they're just kind of like, okay, that's kind of weird. She's sitting in there like with gloves, and she's doing stuff, and they seem kind of like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool.
I don't think they get a heck of a lot of women in the woodworking.
I think that's also kind of entertaining because I watch some of the guys watch some women come in there, and they're just like especially in the woodworking. And like, it's funny because I see like some women come in there with big ass planks. Oh, excuse me. I see them walk in with the planks, and they're just kind of like. Like, they get this look like, is she just walking in here with a plank of wood? And they're just kind of like, whoa. And I'm like, yeah, we can work with the planks too, you know. Come on now.
There's actually been more women in the wood shop lately, and it's lovely. I think it's fantastic. Mm. Yeah.
I'm thinking back to when they were at the old location. It was a little bit of a different vibe.
We were never there.
We were never at the older location because actually, Zona, you are the reason that I'm at Makerspace.
I mean, and I loved making that we loved making that connection. And I think, you know, it was such kismet too, because I remember how I think we were at a show together. I don't remember which show it was, but I remember
Geek and Grub.
I don't remember which show it was, but we were talking about something and you were talking about how you were like, oh, I think I'm going to start getting into like stained glass. And you were talking about how you wanted to like start teaching classes. And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
You know when this was?
When?
It was at the Guild of Charlotte Artists. Remember, we were hanging out at the that coffee shop.
Oh, was it?
Or whatever it was.
At the People's Market.
The People's Market, yeah. And you were talking about, because you had just started doing stained glass at that time. Or at least you were just starting to sell it. Like
I was starting to sell it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I remember we went to the makerspace for something else, and that's when Courtney mm-hmm. was just like, "Yeah, we need someone." I'm looking for someone to do stained glass classes, and we were just like,
"We were over there because we were. I think we were dropping off some hides for.
Oh yeah, we were.
What's his name?
Oh, the leather thing.
For yeah, Kai or Ken?
Talk about that.
Who? Ty. Yeah, we were dropping off some hides for Ty.
Kai.
Kai. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That. Anywho.
But no, and so. Courtney reached out to me and she was like, "Hey, we are looking for someone to build a glass lab and teach classes. Are you interested?" And I was like, let me back up.
Because you at that point were trying to figure out how to have, you had a studio.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out how to cram people into it because it was full of Kenna.
Yeah.
it was so, Kenna land. So that full of Kenna.
I like to describe Zona that she's like water, and that she fills the space that she fills the container that she's put in. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Me too. Entrenched. I mean, I'm here to fill up space. I'm taking it all up. But I had my little studio on Monroe Road, and this was October of 2024. And there was another business opportunity that arose in April that year. Mm-hmm. And we had thought about it like real long and hard. I was like, "Oh, this would be great." But I would have turned that into a stained glass studio, and that would not have served that community. And so I was like, "You know what? No, that's not for me." And so in October, when Courtney reached out to me and said, "Hey, Zona, let us know that you're a stained glass artist. We need someone to build the lab. Would you be interested in teaching classes?" And I'm like, "Yes," because I was going to open up my studio in January of 25 to students. But yeah, like Brian said, I had like teeny tiny space and I could only have worked with one or two people at a time. And, you know, and I talked to Steve Gray is the executive director at Makerspace. And we were talking about, you know, what he's looking for and what Makerspace is. And I'm like, "You're going to put money behind my dreams? Like, I really want this. Let's go." And you guys, it has shifted a lot for us. Because as, you know, festival and show artists, there's not a lot happening in January and February. But we still have to eat and keep the lights on. So being able to teach in Q1 is huge. And I don't know. I can't say enough good things about it. I love teaching stained glass. Like it brings me such joy.
Well, when I look at your schedule now, I think I remember I used to look at your schedule and it would be market after market after market. I think you're doing as many classes now as you're doing markets, if not more.
Yeah, it's pretty much 50-50.
I mean, honestly, it this out of Kenny gets mad about it. We're basically doing with classes will make us more money. We'll make Kenna more money than the show will. We tend to do the classes. So there are a lot of the smaller shows we don't drive to Raleigh as much. We started doing a lot of small shows in Raleigh and it was great. And we love the people and we miss those shows, but living in Wake Forest and driving to Raleigh is a half hour drive. Living in Charlotte is a 3 hour drive. So it's gotta be worth it to go all the way up there. And so some shows, our Explosure, for example, is,
yes,
but we're only up for the big shows. And even smaller shows, Kenna does three or four classes in a weekend. She might make more than we did. It would make it the show. So it's just a lot of it's financial.
It's a lot less exhausting, too. I mean, not that classes aren't exhausting.
Not in the same way.
You don't have the setup, the breakdown, especially if it's a multi-day show and you have to, you know, break down all your inventory and set it back up again the next day.
The physical output is different and it's not as much. Like when you're talking about setting up the tent and like setting up the
lugging everything from the truck to the
right, you've got the get everything from your garage to the truck, mm-hmm. and then you've got the go from the truck to the spot, and then you've got to build up everything.
Kenna just has a two-seat minivan. Our stuff just stays Clampett style in the van at all times. So.
Your setup is no joke either. I mean, you guys, I don't know if you still, I remember when you were doing a lot of the wizard theme stuff, you had a pretty Like it's a it was a pretty tall setup,
yeah, didn't you? Middle towers on both sides. We had done a show in South Carolina, PowerCon, I think, or something like that. And it was a 6 foot table. We needed to go up. We can't go out. We got 6 feet, so we got too much stuff. So I made little. They like collapsed like guitar cases, and they had little shelves, and you could stack things on them. So
we did that. We did that once. I don't know. We did an event for a friend of ours, Vic Guarini, and he did. He would do this thing called Shred, which was a fundraiser for kids with spinal bifida. And he would basically give artists skate decks, and he'd have you decorate them, and then they would auction them off and use the money towards the charity.
Right.
So Zona had done a couple of those, and he said, well, you know, you can also come and set up. But all he gave us was a six-foot table, and we had all of these grids, and I was like, I got an idea. And I just started building them higher and higher, and we had this massive monstrosity of a grid that was like 7 feet tall.
And he was just like, you're going to hate it. And I'm like, I won't say I hate it until I see it. And then he just built it. And I was like,
you're like, I don't hate it.
It's like, I don't hate it. I just hope you don't plan for me to like
reach up and get it.
Exactly. And I'm like, well, that's what tall husband is for. That's all.
So,
a profession.
So I think a lot of the our listeners would like to get into classes, like to get into conducting classes. So what went into that? I know that part of it is getting the materials, right? Getting the equipment, and the makerspace helped a lot with that.
Yes.
But what about the actual putting together a curriculum, right? Whatever, I don't know if you would call it a curriculum or not, but putting together. Totally. Yeah, putting together like the actual, you know, the material sets that you need and getting advertising out there. I know you advertise at your markets to try to draw customers in that way. What kind of goes into setting up a successful class?
Ooh, I love talking about this. So I think that tried to think about what kind of experience I wanted people to have when they came to my class. I want them to just come in and everything is as easy as it can be because the actual work is hard. So my class is a 4-hour class and it's all project based. And they come, you come and I explain how to, let me back up. So yeah, I explain how to cut the glass, grind it down, foil it, solder it, and then clean it and polish it. So you learn all of the fundamentals of that craft. And we have a really good time just being human while we're doing that. But it's 4 hours. And it's a really neat time dilation because you're doing something the whole time. But I had to figure out how long it would take most people to make that, because for me, it's something like the Monstera leaf or, you know, a hummingbird. It might take me 45 minutes to an hour from start to finish to make, but it's not going to take someone who's never done this before that short of time. So, you know, I had friends that sat with me and I showed them how to do it and it, you know, I timed us. But mostly I just, you know, I remembered, you know, I had taken my own class with a woman who taught me how to make stained glass. And there were things that you learn along the way that are a little different. And so like for us, the way that I cut my pattern out would have taken 45 minutes to an hour. So we changed that versus how, based on how I was working. So, you know, think about how you want the flow of class to go. Think about the space that you're in. Think about the tools that you have. How would you want the person that you love most in the world to feel moving through that class? Because you want them to feel important. They are important. And you want them to feel, you want to instill confidence in them. So I'm not going to make an extremely complicated design for a first-time stained glass maker. I'm going to make something that has some challenges, but is also very doable and achievable.
And creates a desirable product at the end, something you actually want to take home.
Right. So I tell most people, this is not going to be your best piece of stained glass, but it's not, it's going to be beautiful. Your 822nd Monstera leaf is going to be your best Monstera leaf, but we're going to get one today and it's going to look like what it looks like. And I tell people, as long as it looks leafish, we can work with it. But
leafish, you know,
leafish. Yeah. It was really funny when I was making fish. But the fish. Yeah. But, yeah, think about, I don't know. For me, I thought a lot about, you know, how we were going to move through the space and through the different steps and what they needed to have and what would be easiest, not easiest, but best for me to do and to have set up for them.
From an outside point of view, it's interesting. The thing that I think that you have struggled with the most and is also one of the most important things for any teaching situation is time management.
Oh, yeah.
Like how long, because you only have 4 hours, say. I mean, we're not in a rental situation, but we have been to places where there was we get kicked out at noon or whatever. And it's how long is this phase going to take? How long is this phase going to take? And what do you do when someone's not keeping up? We're like, everyone's ready except that guy. And what do you do? And how do you address that? How do you keep everybody on the same page and moving? Because it has very clear, stained glass has very clear phases, mm-hmm. you know, cutting and grinding and, you know, foiling and polishing. And you have to hit certain benchmarks, certain time points, or it pushes the next stuff down the line, which is, again, is true in like classroom teaching as well.
But you also don't want to stress people out by like, okay, we got 5 more minutes, finish now.
Yes. I'm not saying you should, but
issue. I feel like over the last year and a half of teaching, I've found that happy place where, so like the first step where we're cutting glass and we have, you know, you're choosing your glass and choice paralysis is a thing. I will help people choose their glass. If they have, you know, if it's been 20 minutes and you haven't chosen your glass, you got to start cutting.
I think she had a bit of that.
And it's okay. You're an artist. You want it to be beautiful.
I think it was because I couldn't find the glass. I knew which one I wanted. I think I just couldn't find it. Mm. I think that's my problem was that night.
But, you know, and so now if, you know, most people are able to find what they're looking for. And if not, you know, I'll look in my own supply and like, maybe I've got something for you. But when we get to a point where we need to start grinding, if you haven't cut all of your glass, put your pattern on the glass you're using. I'll cut that out for you and bring it to you. So there's things that I've found that I can do as the teacher to help all of us stay on track together. Cause I think it's more important for all of us to all of the students to, move at the same into the next phase at the same time because we're all working together.
You find little pinch points where there's going to be a problem here, like choice paralysis with the glass. That's going to be a point to keep your eye on very clearly. And you know, if this person is trying to do something the wrong way or they misunderstood an instruction, that happens occasionally, then you can go, oh, you can identify that problem. So just you learn to look out for
sidetracks. One thing that I've learned is I don't hand out the next step until I've shown the step. Because if I hand foil to everybody and they've got their pieces of glass cut out, they're going to start foiling while I'm giving the instructions. I want you to stop and watch and look and learn. And then I'm going to hand you the foil. Because if I hand them things and they're working with their hands, they're not listening. They're trying to do it on their own, which I get. I'm like that too. So please, you know, withhold all the things until I've followed the direct or listened to the directions. I had something good, but I forgot it. Sorry.
It's my fault.
It's your fault, Brian. Take accountability.
No, just there's so much beauty in helping people learn something. And, you know, when people are struggling with things, you know, I say, you know, you woke up not knowing how to do this. I'm so proud of you guys for stepping out of your comfort zone. There's a big balance in making sure that people have agency in what they're doing, but also helping them and helping them with their confidence. Just watching people see that they can do something that they didn't think they could do before is amazing. And I think that's remarkable.
I think also trying to look at it from the student's point of view as much as possible. Put yourself in their shoes, which I think when, so Kenna taught us the garden gnome class for Christmas last year, me and Jack, my son, our son, and my mom, all, and I think some just random folks too.
Yeah.
Did that, but it was, so I've been watching her and seeing her do it and how she does everything. And she has preferences like we all do. And after doing that there, so for the example I'm thinking of is for grinding glass, you have to put it on the blade and you push it into it. And there's a little tool that kind of clamps it. And so you have basically like kind of like vice grips, but they're plastic for the glass. And it, I find, and our son Jack found, it was much easier to use, especially small pieces with those, that grinder. Kenna didn't care for it just for whatever reason. She didn't like it. So it kind of carried through and didn't really show that. But Jack went from being the slowest grinder to the fastest in a group of people because of that tool. It just helps certain people. So I don't like it for all things, but for some things it's a lot easier. So, but Kenna never considered using it in class because she didn't like it.
So now we have them for all the students, and all the grinders have them. Just, I guess just being open to, we're artists. We observe, we watch behavior. We, you know, we look at things as well as people. And, you know, you're going to find, you know, your first class is not going to be your best class, just like your first Monstera, you know, piece won't be your best, but your 822nd class is going to be awesome. And just be open to changing what doesn't work. And it's not anything bad about you. If something that you thought was going to be a good idea was not a good idea, just it's okay.
It happens.
What would you say, looking back at some of the early classes that you did? Because how long have you been doing this for? About a year and
about
a half?
About a year and a half. So October 24. So, yeah.
About a little over a year and a half.
Yeah.
Looking back at some of your first classes that you did, what do you feel you wish you had known then what you know now as far as running a class?
Mostly about time management. About ways to help people move along. Oh my gosh, that's probably it. I don't know, just the way that I explain things has gotten better. Mm-hmm. Just finding terms that aren't confusing to people, because, just using, I don't know, this is a really good question. Time management is most of it. Explaining things, I've gotten better at, you know, explaining the top, the back, and the edges versus the side. Like, you'll never hear me use the word side anymore because nobody knows what that means.
All of the edges are sides.
All of the edges are
sides.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if you were saying side, I wouldn't know if you're talking about the front or the back of the glass or the edge of the glass or, yeah.
And so, you know, and it's just, I think it's just small things like that, but just, you know, tweaking it every single time. I have
some of that actually. The point about when you do it, especially if you work by yourself or with someone else, but you tend to end up with a sort of a shorthand and a process, and so you call the tools what never comes to mind, and you work with them so often you don't think about any other way to do things. So, foiling, for example, again, another tool. Someone gave us a little foil machine. It has you hold the foil and you twist it. And it, you know, wraps the foil and lets you control it. It basically holds the foil while you wrap the glass around it. And I like it a lot. Ken, I can't stand it. But again, it's just a difference of opinion. The thing that you use, if you assume everyone, that's the way to do it and there is no variation, it might be hard for someone. But people, Ken has folks who don't have a lot of hand strength. They can't push down hard enough to cut the glass, or they're not doing it. And so that's a challenge you have to address and figure out a way for them to work, or seating arrangements for the woman who just passed, was in a wheelchair and she didn't have the wrist strength. We had one of the folks at Makerspace put in a shelf so you could pull a wheelchair up to the glass table and work on that, which was good. Worked for her. She stayed in her walker and was able to be in the class.
Yeah.
I will say when you're cutting glass, at least when I was doing it, I was always that fear that I'm going to just press down too hard and it's just going to shatter.
Yeah.
And, cause you don't, like, if you don't work with glass, you have preconceived ideas of, right, you know, how glass is going to react to things. And you're just used to glass. Like if you apply too much pressure, it's going to shatter and you don't want to do that.
Right. It is a tricksy medium because it is both incredibly sharp and not. Yeah. So I bumped against a piece of glass the other day and I got cut because I was picking it up and putting it and it slid just a little bit. But if you just push and don't slide, it won't cut you. You can push the glass into the grinder all day long and you'll just get a sore thumb and a callus. But if you slide, it'll open up your finger. So you have to be, you know what's what it flexes to a certain degree, and then it shatters. You know, it's every medium has its own little idiosyncrasies, and glass is no exception by far. Heat is a big issue, expansion, contraction.
Right.
Well, with wood, it's moisture, right? That's our biggest enemy.
Mm-hmm. I had visions during the class that I was just like, I'm going to completely slice my fingers open during this class. I know it. I'm going to be bleeding all over the piece at some point. I know that's what's going to happen. I'm just prepared for this. But
moving
like,
glass is the dangerous part. Moving big pieces of glass. Oh, yeah. Picking up glass and moving it, putting it on a shelf, carrying. Actually, working with a stained glass is relative. I've never cut myself with that. I only bump up against something when I'm moving something or it slides in my hand or I'm trying to slide it in somewhere or, God forbid, you wipe something.
But when you're taking your first stained glass class, you are unlearning a lifetime of don't play with broken glass. Right. You'll get hurt.
Glass is the devil.
And I'm asking you to come
cut your throat.
Play with my broken glass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Zona's medium is not that different, right? Because it's heat, right? You're working with heat, and it's all about understanding the safety measures that you need to take and how to control the heat as opposed to just being afraid of it.
Absolutely. I'm the one that's sitting there going, is this hot? Can I tell you how many times we've done that in class? Is it hot? Oh, God, it is hot.
It is. It's hot.
I've bought her all kinds of pottery because she can keep the pottery around so she could take her her pens and put them somewhere where they're not going to, like, sear the table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's got She's got this. Hold on. Let me grab it.
Oh, my fishy.
Yeah. This is the.
Oh, it.
Yeah, there's pens in there.
Of course, it's got pens in there.
Yeah, but they're not hot. This is the.
Oh wow! Oh, so cool.
That's
I
so
recognize
cute.
That artist.
Yeah.
You know him?
I know someone who has one like that.
I don't know their name, but I've seen that.
It's Beasley Ceramics.
Okay.
Beasley Ceramics. It's supposed to be a soap, like a.
It's a sponge holder.
Right.
But she puts all of her pens in there so that she doesn't set fire to the house.
At the stained glass lab, Shanoa has one of those, and she puts bits of solder in it. She just
It's one of the more perfect things for my pens for a lot of different reasons. Like when I'm, especially when I'm burning, I put my pens in there because since I'm on the table and the cats are just like flat surface and they like to walk over everything. And I'm like, they've singed themselves. And I'm
burnt cat hair is not a smell that you want to have.
It's terrible. And
lingering in the house.
I have visions of burnt paws and burnt tails. And
Yeah. Ours love to walk on like trays full of glass. You should really just not. I mean, it's not that day, but maybe don't walk on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not do that. Maybe let's not walk on the burnt. I'm like, oh.
Another interesting point about the fish, though, that is a good example of the problem of maker stuff is when, because like, I was in design school one time, I went to the Home Depot and I'm looking at that wall of brass pipe fittings because I was doing an air powered keg icing machine for my master's degree. And the guy, hey, can I help you? Probably not, because I'm not sure what to tell you. It's like, if you want to have the thing you need, but it's not called the thing you need the sponge holder. You want a thing to put your irons in, but it's called it's a sponge holder. You don't know it's a sponge holder yet. You got to find that out. And then buy a sponge holder that
can
goes
you say for us one more time what it was that you were building?
In my master's thesis at State was on air pressure driven cake decorating icer, because Kenna used to be a cake icer. She used to decorate for literal royalty in Raleigh, and you squeeze over and over and over and over again, and it blows out your carpal tunnel. And all those tendons, and you get tendonitis in your arms and whatnot. She learned to decorate left-handed. She's not left-handed. And then got it in the other hand, got the surgery, the whole thing. But she was basically washed up at 28 from doing this thing. She was having like clenching and all kinds of therapy and whatnot. And I was trying to design the thing that would let you just trigger with the air as opposed to having to squeeze the stuff out.
This is before like everyone had a 3D printer also.
Yeah.
So this is like, there was a big machine that would deposit
It was a powder printer, a 3D, as NC State had, I don't have, but they had a powder printer, which is a powder bed printer, where it basically has a bed of powder, that scrapes the bed smooth, sprays glue, scrapes another layer, sprays glue, and so you slowly build up essentially a sand sort of like a little things crabs make, a little sand thing out of powder that's glued together with a little spray glue. And then you soak the whole thing in super glue and it gets hard. And then you can sand it, polish it, and whatnot.
Yeah, that sounds more like an industrial design type of thing. That's not like a.
That's what my degree's in. So, yeah.
Can I footnote something real quick?
Yeah.
You decorated cakes.
I did.
I did that at one of my jobs. I used
to. Yeah. I love
royalty, though.
Not for royalty, but I did. That was one of my jobs.
Well, we don't know. I mean, royalty could have been buying a cake from BJ.
You never know.
That's true.
But I just thought that was funny. Like, one of my jobs, I used to work in BJ's wholesale. BJ's? Uh-huh. And the manager used to hide me in the back and she'd have me like decorate all of the cakes. She'd be like, here, decorate. And I was like,
like, yay. I love that.
You're here for 4 hours? Decorate.
I would still be decorating cakes probably if the carpal tunnel wasn't an issue. Because, I mean, a few hours.
You need an industrial air-powered compression cake decorator.
Production is difficult.
Yeah.
I will say, that was after every shift. I mean, I only did that's when I was part-time. I was only there for like 4 hours a week. Like 4 hours a week at that point.
We do that for 60 hours a week. And
until you're done on Friday.
Because on Fridays for the weddings, we would just stay there till we were done. And so I'd be there till like 1 or 2 in the morning. And we're like, I mean, but these are like $10,000 cakes.
Yeah.
Like insane.
Like when BTI Center wrapped a run of cats and there was a cast party, they would call Edible Art to get the cake.
Yeah.
So like when the governor's ball, they did the one for the governor ball. There's like, it was like the premier cake decorating place, not to brag on you, but I will brag on you. It was the premier cake decorating place in Raleigh. It's where all of the big money went to get their stuff. Cause it was not cheap. It's amazing, but it was not cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I only did it for 4 hours and I know like,
but can I tell you
that hurt? So
can I tell you my cake it
for like 60 hours? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Tell your cake story.
So my very first cake that I did at Edible Art. So I took the Wilton's course and loved it. So I got into cake decorating because I was terrible. I made a cake for a friend and it looked like a drunk 6-year-old made it. It was bad.
She said a drunk 6-year-old.
It looked like a kid's drawing.
You should not feed your children alcohol, but
everyone loved it.
If you did, this is the kind of cake that they would concoct.
Absolutely. It tasted good, but yeah.
It was a turkey that looked like you put your hand on. Oh my gosh.
So I'm like, I'm never going to make a bad cake again. So I took the Wilton's course and I was like, holy cow, I'm really good at this. And then I took another one and I was really good at it. And I took another one. And so I started just making cakes for friends. And then I got a job at Harris Teeter and I started and I told them I am here to make money so I can throw a bachelorette party for a girlfriend. And this is how privileged and young I was. The party came and went, I quit that job, which was so stupid, but I was very young.
The only reason you quit that job.
That wasn't, but, and then we moved to Raleigh and I applied to Edible Art. And
you also worked at Baskin Robbins.
I did work at Baskin Robbins.
You working in the back made me think, cause she used to have decorate in the freezer and then the walk-in. Cause it's like ice cream cakes. They can't melt. So you got to decorate them in the freezer.
I loved it.
And that cold air must have been good for that carpal tunnel.
I'm sure. But I applied to a chocolatier and Edible Art and I got both jobs and I was like, no, I'm going to do an Edible Art. But my first week, they were like, okay, so make this cake. And it's just a package. It's a square cake and the top needs to have a certain size lip. And then once that's done, we'll put gum paste ribbons into it. And I made it and they were like, nope, scrape it.
Kate specifically.
Because I didn't do it good enough. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm hot stuff. I'm coming in here. I'm really good.
Best in Wilton's class number 432.
I know. And they're like, and she was like, no, it looks really good, but here's how you do it. And I do it. It wasn't good enough. So for like a whole, like about a week, maybe on Friday, it was good enough. Like someone else made the actual cake and it went to the person, but I scraped that cake and I cried every day leaving. And I was like, they hate me. Kate hates me. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. What have I done? I shouldn't do this. And then I got it, and it was just like the best feeling ever. And
they became best friends.
Yeah, we're friends, and I just remember that every time. Mm-hmm. I like that was such an important lesson
because it wasn't up to their standards, which are extremely high.
Yeah,
I mean, you want to work at the best place in town, you got to be good enough for the best place in town, and she wasn't.
And so I love that.
But most people aren't when they come in, right? I mean,
that's the whole reason.
It's a process.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's an important thing that I think a lot of people don't get that aren't artists. Like they've never had to like, you know, stop, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again, do it again. And that's the whole practice of art.
I think though that even artists, I think even some artists forget that.
Yeah.
Maybe absolutely.
I think there are some artists that forget where they came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
I've spoken to some artists that are amazing. Like they are amazing at the art that they do, and they deserve all the kudos that they receive. But their attitude is so obnoxious that it's distasteful.
Yeah.
To me, like this is my personal opinion. Like it's just like talking to them is like I don't even want to speak to you. Like I enjoy speaking to other artists and like getting to know them and getting to know like their process and just getting to know like where they came from and like how did you get here and like where did you come from? Like how did you get here? And it's not about like trying to like piggyback off your success or like get something from you. Like I'm trying to steal your success or anything. It's about, I want to, because everybody has knowledge to give, right?
Yes.
And this is why this is part of why we wanted to do a podcast is because we wanted to speak to more people. We wanted to speak to other artists. We wanted to speak to people and gain knowledge because we believe that everybody has knowledge to give, no matter mm-hmm. what it is, who it is, old, young, whatever, because everybody knows something because nobody knows everything about everything, right? So this is why we like to speak to people.
Absolutely. And,
I was surprised.
Like, there are some artists that just, like, we've spoken to them and they just seem to be like, almost like, you're too much of a peasant to speak to. And it's just like, what?
I was surprised by like, by how much gatekeeping there is.
Yes, and that's art. The other thing. Like, why? Hmm.
Yeah, like
why?
I mean, I don't
understand.
I think there's a lot of artists who are open and willing to share, but there's a lot who like they've got their success, right? They've figured out, you know, their market. They've figured out what sells, and they don't want anybody to interfere with that, right? Where you know if they see somebody else kind of coming in and like, oh, well, you don't do the type of art that I do, and you're coming in here with your different art and you're taking customers away from me, and yours is not a pure form of art. Yours isn't a traditional form of art, so it's less. And it exists.
It does, but I don't have any time for that, man. I don't.
The first time we saw another wand maker at a show, I lost it because I was afraid, oh my God, we're not going to make any money. Someone's here. And it turned out that I got over it, kind of talked me down. And because everyone's different. Everyone can make their wand and they'd all be different. And their wands are not my wands are not theirs. Kenna's not. It's all. We've met lots of wand makers and none of them look the same by and large. So it wasn't, but that became a big thing, and I had to get over that. And some folks don't want to show you how they do things. They hide their, like, they don't want to let you know. We were always very upfront. Like, here's how we do it. I'll show you right now. Here's how we do it. And this is what you do it. And you do this and that. Here's what you get the stuff. I mean, we've always been very open and welcoming of anybody who wants to learn how to do anything.
I think that whenever there's gatekeeping, it's based in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how we want to live how we live. We want to live with love. Are you kidding me? We are going to get farther together. And if you want to learn something, I'm here to share it with you. And I don't know. I have never... I've never been hurt by showing anybody, by showing someone my art and how my process. I've right. never, it's never come back. And you know, if someone else is going to, you know, take what I do and it helps them, that's fantastic. I hope we all win. And I don't know if this makes me sound naive, but I really don't see a lot of gatekeeping. And maybe I just don't talk to enough people.
Think about where you spend a lot of your time. You spend a lot of your time at the makerspace, where I think that that type of that type of behavior is frowned upon.
Oh yeah, right? We're here to share and learn. Make sure learn. That's their thing.
It's a very natural thing. I mean, when every little kid like covers up their drawing until they're done. You know, they don't want you to see it because they're not done with it yet. Well, mostly like Kenna did it around. But that's a very common thing, even in college. But again, so one of the things I taught for 13 years, graphic design and stuff. And one of the things we had to do was go through, for marketing and do personal branding and like, what are you about? What do you mean? And you had to do like your values and like, what do you want to do? And you know, I did this myself, obviously. And one of my personal values is self-improvement. I was a teacher. I love it when someone wants to learn more. I love learning stuff all the time. And if someone else wants to learn something, I would love to teach you stuff. And I can't, it's hard for me to turn away someone who wants to know more about things that I know or do. I'm always encouraged people to want to learn more and try it themselves. You won't be the same. You can't do exactly the same thing I do. You're not me. You don't have the piece of wood I have. You don't have the equipment I have. You have different equipment. It might be better, but it's going to look different. So it, yeah.
We've had, at festivals and shows, we've had neighbors who were like, wow, I can't believe you share your process with everybody. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I have seen it in that way. And my thing, and that was a person who was a potter. And I don't know if maybe pottery is, you know, more every, you know, you hold on to that closer, but I want people to be curious because we had we used to do a show in Cary, and I had a woman come up to me and she was like, how do you make these? And so I told her it's hot glue and a stick and you move it around and you set it in water and then acrylic paint, acrylic sealer, boom, you got your wand. She was like, she was kind of snooty. And she came back the next month and bought 3 wands from me. And she was like, I can't make that. No, good. Because, and I said, here's a video, you know, that the first time I said, here's a video, you can make your own. And she was like, yeah, I can't make that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that people gatekeep is because they're afraid that someone is going to quote unquote steal their idea, right? Yeah. That's the whole thing. They want to be unique. They're afraid that someone's going to steal their idea. And it's like, okay, but here's the thing. When I make something and I post it, mm-hmm. what do you think someone's going to do? If they really wanted to steal your idea, what are they going to do? They're going to take a picture. They're going to screenshot it and they're going to try and steal it anyway. And it's just like, they're going to try and maybe they succeed. Maybe they don't. What are you going to do? Hunt them down?
Yeah.
We used to talk about this all the time with web design. I'm sure Brian had this too, where people were trying to take pictures of stuff. They want to have a photograph, but they don't want it. They want to like, you can't right click or you can't like, can't steal it. Mm-hmm. You can't save it or whatever. I'm like, look, if it's on my screen, I can keep it. There's no way to hide that.
You can't stop it. You can go and open up the network tab and download it. You can take a screenshot of it. You can take a photo of it with your phone.
Yeah, there's really no way. You have to get over that. You can't keep it all. You know, don't put like a full print resolution photo up, but you can't hide everything. It's this again. You can't show your work, people, and keep it safe. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You got to pick one.
And I think people are even more afraid these days because of services that are downloading all the pictures and feeding them into the training model so that they can do AI art and stuff like that. So people are even more protective of their work now because they're afraid that it's going to be used to train a model and then somebody else is going to create something that's going to look similar to theirs and without having to put the effort in. But
I talked to a guy at a con one time about I was sort of casually interested in the work. And he kind of went off on a tangent about not wanting anyone to take pictures or anything because he was afraid they did t-shirts and they're afraid that if it got online or any way, shape, or form, that someone would copy it and it'd be on Temu the next week. And I'm like, that wasn't really what I was talking to him about. He was so fixated on that, it left this huge impression that you just have to accept that some of your stuff's going to make it out to the world sooner or later. Mm-hmm. It's not yours. I mean, if it's a Temu knockoff of whatever you make, it's probably crap compared to what you do, because that's the whole point, is how cheap can we make it? It won't be the same. You know, the cheap shirt is a cheap shirt. It's not, you know, the nice thing you've got. So
if you're worried that the quality of the stuff that people are going to buy on Temu is comparable to the quality of the stuff that you're producing, maybe you should reconsider the quality of the things that you're producing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which also goes to originality and like things like laser cutting and CNC stuff, lasers particularly. It's like, yeah, you can, people, one guy called it a license to print money.
Yes.
He had a glow for it. He was like super stoked. But the problem, and I've seen this many times with software stuff, is you can have a thing that'll make the thing, but you have to feed it something. It'll tell what to make. And if you don't have any ideas what to make, the machine can't do that for you.
Right. No.
So folks who are like using GlowForges or whatever, not specific to target them, I guess, but people who don't have, or just buying things online or just taking things offline and printing them, are going to be a lot more nervous about that because it's not their original hand-drawn art.
Go to any market and look at, you know, if there's four laser burn wood artists, you'll most likely see the same SVGs. They use the same SVGs for their pieces, and it's like, it's literally the same design. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, that's great. I mean, you know, if somebody sees it and they love it, maybe they would prefer yours because they like the particular type of wood that you use or something like that. But it's not really an original piece. And that's where you run the risk of people stealing your work, because now all they have to do is get that same SVG that you bought off of Etsy for 35 cents and, you know, punch it into the, what is that software that they use for the laser burner?
Light burn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Punch it into light burn and then they can make their own.
So. Anytime there's a little gap when a piece of equipment drops in price enough that there's a certain group of people who can get a hold of it. Mm-hmm. And I suspect we're going to see the Wazer, the desktop water jet be the next one, but laser cutters, 3D printers, CNC machines have all gone through this. And there's a moment where they're cheap enough for some folks to get, and they start going to shows and showing off their stuff. And like 3D printers didn't used to be much of a thing. We didn't see it at shows. Now they're everywhere. Like every show, I'm sure y'all too, every show you go to, there's lots of, some are good and some are bad and some are in between. But the technology, if the only thing separating you from your competition is the technology, the piece of equipment that you use, that's a problem, or it will be soon if it's not yet. So, having original art fixes that.
I was talking to one person. They said they had like 15 of those bamboo machines, the 3D printers, in a room in their house, and they just churn stuff out. And they're just like, it's just a volume game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because some of that stuff sells. I mean, it will for a while. We know folks that do it. There are degrees of it. There's certain levels of things you can put into it. I mean, but then little dragons do sell.
They're cool. They are cool. There's no denying it.
But like, Zona, your work and my work is, so with craft like this, and I mean, it's art, but it's also craft. It's, there is only so much that I can scale up.
Yeah.
Or want to. Yeah. I don't want to be the stained glass magnate of North Carolina. I want to have my home, my bills paid, be secure where I am, to have food in my belly, to live off of
art
and to, and teaching is part of that, selling my work, commissions, festivals. Yeah. But I don't need to be on Time Magazine. I mean,
you should have business cards that say the stained glass magnate of
the cookie girl that we talked to. She's been like, she was at Art Exposure as well, and she was like, you should be at Cheerwine too. You do this, have a booth, so hire somebody to do this. I'm like, man, I don't want to manage teams of glass salesmen at various shows. That's not the vibe we're after.
The only way that she could really scale up at this point would be if she was going to start doing things, start automating things. And that's not what she wants to do.
Someone has suggested that maybe you should hire some people to do wood burning for you. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, that just
You'd never find anybody who could meet your quality standards.
Absolutely. Yes. I'd be insane. Yeah. People would not want to work for me.
You'd have the largest turnover rate of anybody in North Carolina.
No one would want to work for me. I'd be the worst boss to work for.
Your boss at the edible art,
yeah.
Edible art would
no.
Would be a pushover compared
yeah,
to
Zona. Yeah, but a pushover by comparison.
No.
But I get that.
So I think you can, like, Jess has a few pinch points that Kenna has her finger on. So, like, picking the designs, obviously, but she does the cutting, which she's very good at, and then the soldering, so she has sort of bookending to it. So me and Jack can do the things in the middle that are more
grunt Jack work, is our son.
More grunt work. He's gotten pretty good at grinding.
And I don't think we've met your son.
No, I
don't think we've met your son. He usually doesn't come to shows with you, does he?
No. He got tired of our crap by when he was 12.
No, we decided. Wait.
So have both of our sons.
I mean, once you go to enough Comic Cons, you're like, yeah, whatever. It's not a Comic Con.
We decided we didn't want to push that on him because he is such a good kid and he will always do anything we ask him to do. But we needed to respect his autonomy and not force him to do this thing with us because this was us. And he has, anytime we've asked him to do anything, he will always jump up and do it.
He got drugged at a lot of shows when he was too young to leave at home.
Yeah, that's true.
And then when he was at home, that's all he wanted was to be left at home. That kind of just didn't stop, actually.
But now Matthew's in school. Matthew's actually going to NC State, so he's going to your old
school. Awesome.
And CJ's working. He's working two jobs, so they have no time for our nonsense.
No time for our nonsense for a hot minute. So they're like, thank God. But
okay.
No, but I mean, yeah, I couldn't. I feel like it just, if we were to hire somebody, it just loses. It would lose the handmade for me. It loses the handmade. It loses its...
I mean, you could find someone to do some of the, like, the prep stuff. I mean, the actual wood burning, obviously, your hand, but, like, planing the wood, cutting it down, that kind of stuff, maybe.
We use...
You're right. That kind of stuff, yeah. It would be nice if I could, like, offset... Well, I kind of have.
Oh, nice!
I buy the stuff.
Yeah, we have
from somebody else.
The couple who used to do this podcast with us last... For the first two seasons, they have a wood shop up in Pennsylvania, and they get all like locally sourced wood, and they prep it.
That's their business.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we buy a lot of stuff from them, and it comes prepped and ready to go. And then we also buy some flat stock from them, and we use the laser cutter to cut shapes. And then we can use those shapes and she can burn on them. So, like, you could use that to do, like, earrings and Christmas ornaments and stuff like that. She can she can get the template and then she could just work
from
that.
That's what I use our laser cutter for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bernadette.
Bernie.
Yeah, I love it!
That's our intern. That is our intern.
That's so good. That's
so much of a name. We didn't have a name.
Oh my gosh.
So like we offset that kind of stuff. I used to be like, no, I have to go to the lumber yard and get it and do it all myself. And he was just like, dude, like for real, time.
Yeah, well,
is that really worth your time? And I'm like, I could be doing this.
You have to value your time.
Yeah,
and like I have a whole stockpile of stuff that I really do have to work through. So that's part of the game plan in the next couple of years. Because truly, I have years worth of stuff. But like you, I'm like moving out of the. We're just tired at this point, and like we're moving out of the market, like the just like the. Pop-up market game and into the art game. Like we want to do art market, like art shows, and, or
by the time
markets that are like markets that are really financially beneficial for us, and not the ones that are not, unless they're either fundraisers that are meaningful for us, like that are our soul.
Right.
Or really just financially worth it. Like, we don't want to just do markets to be doing markets. Like,
right. 100%.
This is not the economy to be like, woo, let's just throw money up in the air anymore, right? But we just,
there's too many that we just break even or, you know,
or not at all. Like, we were just throwing money to the wind. And it's just like, one, we're tired. He's got his full-time job, right? And like, this is my full-time job, but he's got his full-time job and he's just tired. He's got so many plates in the air. He's back in school getting his master's.
You know? Oh, congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm almost there. I got, I've got one class over the summer, one class in the fall, and then I should be done by next summer. So,
Brian, that's great.
That's amazing. What's your degree in?
It's a computer science with a focus on information security and application development.
Ooh. He's been doing this for a year and a half now?
Yeah, my job's paying for it, so I'm taking full advantage of it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
At 47 years old, it's hard going back to school at 47.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in my 30s when I went back. It's much easier. I can't imagine doing it now.
He's been busy, you know, and there's just a lot of plates in the air. And the bottom line is we're just physically tired. And just,
yeah. Well, I guess that makes the whole point of valuing your time even more important.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just like.
Kenna always very fond of, like, when we make something like the wands or whatever. Because it's hot glue, a dowel, and some paint. And she's like, so, like, we got, like, what, like, $1 in this thing? And I'm like, yeah, but you are in this thing. Like, the time you spent making this is what makes it different. The glass, the choices, the colors, all that stuff, you make the thing. And you have to take account of that. Like, yes, we have $1 in materials or whatever. But that's not, you know, gestalt. There's, you know, hot glue stick, a dowel, and some paint is not a wand. It's the potential to be a wand, but it's not a wand.
Yeah.
We had a friend of ours, Megan, on a couple of episodes back, and the topic was pricing your work. And a lot of what we talked about was the kind of intrinsic value that you get out of the time that you put into a piece, right? That the piece is not just the cost of the materials. The piece is not just the cost of the overhead involved in it. Your time, right? Like, every hour that you spend on that piece has a dollar value associated with it, because it's your time. You know, it's you have to value That's yourself.
The majority of it, I would say.
Yes.
Probably your time. In terms of, like, things that are put in, more of your time went in typically than, I mean, because the whole point is having something that you can mark up.
And so it's not even just the time that it took from start to finish. It's all the time that you put into learning that craft.
That too.
It's all my mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Every piece that you have to throw out.
All your techniques that you've learned, all your upgrades you've made.
All of it.
That thing you built just as it does exactly what you need to do that no one but you would ever need.
Yeah.
You know, that thing. It's all
over. We have lots of those things.
We do too.
Lazy Susans that were, you know, cobbled together from.
Mm-hmm. All the things that we MacGyvered together.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, but we've decided what is the best thing. We're like, what's going forward for, you know, our own business? What do we want to do? And we decided that, you know, we wanted to do more art focused, art centric thing.
Yeah, that's same.
So we're evolving.
Ask one more question, because we do have to wrap soon.
Yes.
So what advice would you give to somebody who's starting out, who wants to start doing classes as a beginner?
I would say, try it. Don't, if you are even questioning, should I do this? Yes, you should. You may find that you're terrible at it and then stop. But if you find that you love it and you're pretty good at it and you're well received, then do it. Figure out how much you want to be paid for your time with teaching. Whatever it is that, you know, you're supplying versus somebody else is supplying, you know, figure out, you know, do yourself a favor and build that into the cost.
Practice.
Yeah.
Teach your kid or your family how to do a thing, or run through a class with somebody, because it will be different than you think it will be. They'll ask questions you never even occurred to you.
Yeah.
And that'll probably happen even well into.
Oh, yeah.
You'll learn more about your own craft teaching it to someone else than you ever would have learned in a room
every
by yourself.
Single time.
I learned stuff. I'd been using Photoshop for 20 years. I learned stuff from students who asked me, what does this thing do? I don't know. What does it do? Okay. What that? I've been turning it off because it would do that.
What does the burn tool actually do? And why is it called the burn tool?
Isn't there a saying like the best way to learn something is to teach it or something?
Oh, yeah.
There is now.
That's what I've done for. And I would agree with
Brian. I might one day I may have to ask you to impart some of those Photoshop skills on me because I've used GIMP for years. Wow. And last year I bought Photoshop and I uninstalled it because I was so frustrated because it works so different than GIMP.
If you're going to go somewhere, I'm currently going for Canva or Affinity Designer.
Canva's good.
Oh, God.
Canva is great.
Canva is very, like, quick, get the thing out. Affinity is more a Photoshop competitor.
Okay.
It does Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign style, like layout, vector graphics, and pixel graphics. I'm trying to learn it, but, again, Photoshop 2.5 is where I started, so I'm kind of hard in the Adobe thing, but I'm kind of sick of Adobe, and they suck now.
I was using 4.5 pretty much exclusively for years because I had a
copy.
Yes.
A copy.
that served me well until it was no longer compatible with whatever operating system I was on. Right, so right. I switched to GIMP.
I was never willing to go to GIMP. I know about GIMP. I thought about it. That was the reason I never went to Linux is and then I have GIMP and that's all I got. I don't have Photoshop and I need that for my job. So
I will say watching Brian use InDesign or Photoshop or Illustrator is like watching someone play the piano, a concert pianist. He's just like, both hands are going and it is quite
like, I feel like it's like did you ever see that movie Minority Report?
Yes.
Did you ever see Minority Report?
Where he would just pull things
he's kind of just moving windows around with his hands and
yeah.
The funny thing about you mentioned Photoshop 4.5. I'm pretty sure 4.5 exactly is when they changed a bunch of the shortcuts in Photoshop. And yes, I was pissed for like a whole year.
Hated it.
I was so mad because I had like muscle memory on these things. They moved like the paint bucket went from like G to K or K to G or one of those. And I was just I was angry about it. I was also like 25 and I was pissed at all kinds of shit. But it was like
it didn't take much.
Damn you. And Affinity Designer is a whole other world and I feel so old trying to use the damn thing. There's stuff that makes more sense. That's just modern. So instead of holding down shift to make it stay square, it just stays square unless you hold down shift. Because usually you want it to stay in the same proportions. And that's always been a teaching problem. But
I think one of the things that frustrated me the most about the version of Photoshop that I installed was how hard it was pushing AI tools.
Oh, I don't actually have a new one. I have an older copy.
Yeah, they've got the subscription one. And right. they push updates to you. And it was just like everything, it would give you, like use the AI, use the AI, use the AI. And then you would use it. And then after like three uses, they'd be like, okay, now you have to pay extra for that feature, and then it'd keep hammering for money.
That's just like weird, like pre-ban kind of, I had one of the versions before AI really hit. And I was feeling kind of bad about it. Well, it's getting kind of old. I mean, maybe I should look into update. And then the AI thing hit. And like, now it's like, the last good one.
Hold on to that with zero life before
non-AI, non-subscription is actually a package and it's all by itself. So yeah, it's become a classic. It's not old. It's now a classic.
It's like a vinyl.
Yeah.
And I want to go back and just say that I've thought about my answer to the question is what advice would you give to a new teacher?
Okay.
And I think that if you have a gift, share it. That's
Ooh,
it.
I like that.
Weird. It's very good.
Yeah. I like that.
We'll hold it in, give it to the world, and it will come back to you tenfold.
And you're probably better than you think you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people you're teaching don't know how to do what you do.
Oof, for sure.
I mean, I had a professor in design school that he taught sketching, and he was amazing. He was everyone's, god-tier sketcher. And he would talk about, you can go into the dungeon and pull up, do all your detailed drawings and your 3D model and make it all crisp and shiny and clean. And they are impressed by that. But when you talk to clients and you're at the conference table and you just grab a pen and go, oh, so you want to change it like this and just draw it. That blows their minds. That's magic to them because they can't draw. That's something they never really worried about. That's what makes the magic happen. And so if you have a thing you can do that not everybody can do, realize that not everybody can do it. Like wood burning, I understand how to do it. I know you put hot thing on wood, but it's not what Zona does. I can put agua on a stick. Doesn't mean I can make one of Kenneth's wands. It's, you know, understand
that. Can we use that?
I like that.
I think we're going to use that. That's going to be the tagline for our company. Yeah. Put hot thing on wood.
Hot thing on wood.
That's going to be the tagline for this episode.
Or maybe we'll get t-shirts, right? So we'll get
we'll put that on the next line of t-shirts.
Do you have any plugs that you want to give?
Yes, let's do it.
Yes, please come take a class with me at Makerspace Charlotte. You can go to our website and find live links. It's moderngoldfish.com. The tickets are sold through Eventbrite for classes at Makerspace. But I also want to tell you guys, I have spent the last year putting together a roaming stained glass lab. So I can come to you in your house, in your the apartment complex, you know, big space, and I can work with at least five students or up to five students, and we can make a design. It's still, you know, 4 hours. I find that with private classes, it usually goes to about 5 hours because you're having fun, you know, your drinks, you're with your friends.
No drinking, but
you know, snacks and stuff. Yeah, let's not sip and solder.
We're soldering irons and broken glass.
Yeah,
we've toyed with the idea of doing a sip and burn type of thing, but the same thing might put the same problems might occur.
He was like,
sip and burn. I'm like, no, we're not doing a sip and burn.
It was like a 12-second conversation for us too. Like, no, that's not.
But I would love, you know, so right now it's people reaching out, you know, I'm talking to people about it and reaching out and scheduling that one-on-one. I'll have some information more about that.
You have to let us know about that.
Well, hopefully all of your events are on Modern Goldfish.
They are on Modern Goldfish, yes. And so Modern Goldfish is the best place to find us, moderngoldfish.com. And then Instagram is kind of the social media that we have decided to play with. We're on Facebook, but things get pushed from Instagram to Facebook just because I don't have that.
Our posts are on Facebook, but we are not.
Yes. That's part of the course with artists.
Show them your fish.
Yeah. So
look for the fish. That's Mogo. Fish. And all our stuff has Eugene on it. Yeah. I have mine, but it's like, I can't really see it anyway.
Eugene, I didn't know he has a name.
Oh my gosh. Can I really quickly tell you the story of Eugene?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So Eugene is our goldfish, our logo. He's a modern goldfish. And Brian and I met back in 95. They've seen it. And I was in Charlotte. Brian was at NC State. And we would go back and drive back and forth. And we'd write letters to each other because it's before the internet. And I was, you know, had been struggling with depression, like serious, like life-changing depression. And Eugene became a kind of like a comic strip thing. We would just draw back and forth to each other. And he was Eugene, the suicidal goldfish. And he wanted to end it all, but he kept getting thwarted because life is wonderful. And it was just a way for me to actually talk about how I was feeling and what I was dealing with. And he's always been with us. And when it came time to Modern Goldfish started as my mommy blog when I became a stay-at-home mom. And so I posted about my garden and all the just little arty things I was doing. But it was Modern Goldfish.
BZ Fur first started in a very similar way. It was not intended to be a business.
Yeah.
It was just because I'm Brian, she's Zona. So when we would do something and we were successful at it, like it was like our battle cry. We'd be like BZ Fervor, you know, like
I love
like
that.
Our chant of achievement. Oh. And yeah. Then when we started the business, we were trying to think of a name, and then we were like, we should just call it BZ Fervor. And that everybody like comments on the name. They're like, what does that even mean? And they kind of like think it's stupid at first. But then, you know, once we explained it to them, then they appreciate it more. And two, people remember it.
There's a fur people.
Yeah, you're fur. Yeah.
The fur people. They can never remember the B and the Z, which is fine. But they remember the fur part.
I love that.
Because they never figured out what the fur part is. Mm-hmm. But it sticks in their head.
Well, it's fur because weird. We've got all these cats and sugar yeah. gliders and
yeah, you get hedgehogs. A lot of animals.
Yes, we had
yeah.
hedgehogs.
It's the day I learned.
Yeah. I think you forgot to mention that you are the 2026 Art Pop. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You could probably say better than I can.
I am part of the 2026 Art Pop cohort of artists that have been selected for this year's cohort. So Art Pop is an organization that connects artists with organizations and businesses for like public space art and public art projects. And it's a juried event and it lasts for 1 year. And the main thing that I think most people will see is the billboards that they create. And so they've taken you, I was selected as this part of this year's cohort and my art is on a billboard, y'all. It is 36 feet by 10 and a half feet on I-77 southbound towards Charlotte after the Gilead exit, and you can see it. It'll be up there for the year. So the way that they work, and it's really beautiful. They're 501c3.
Notable. They're also on all Adams digital billboards. So mm-hmm. they cycle through. There's one ever in Independence and Ottawa we see a lot that cycles through them. Their ads mixed in that they'll be on there.
And it's going to be up at in Times Square.
In Times Square, yes.
And internationally, apparently.
And internationally this summer, Art Crush is the group that they're working with.
I think, Jill Melissa?
Yeah.
So yeah. Jill Melissa was in the 2025 Art Pop.
Yeah, she was last year.
If I'm not mistaken, we were watching the ball drop for New Year's. And you could see her thing in the background. You could see her billboard in the background.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, we are going to go. We just need to figure out when that's going to happen just because we've got, you know, I teach camp and there's just so much happening. And so when the kiddo goes back to school, we'll definitely have some time to go do that. But no, it's a huge honor. I feel like I'm from Charlotte and I didn't think I could feel more deeply rooted here, but to be part of this group and have my art in the city is huge. It's amazing. And I'm, it's a big honor. I've been really working through how I feel about it. It was very overwhelming in the beginning. And I'm working on just stepping into that light. And I think that's something that I'll be working on for the rest of my life, but it's wonderful. I'm looking forward to what it brings. And I'm gonna go talk to high school students at the summer program at the McCall Center about my art and my practice because of this, things like this. And so I think that, things like this are just ways for us to connect with more people and to step into different rooms. And it just comes from being the right person in the right place with the right jurors. You've been working hard. We're all working hard. There were 225 people who applied. I'm sure they were all very qualified. Mine just happened to hit the right people at the right time. And I'm so grateful for it.
It was your year.
It was. Yeah.
There were two people in the group. One would have been applying for 15 years, which is from day one. Yeah.
That's Angela.
Angela tried for 13 years.
Yeah, it was 13. Yeah,
and then that was Angela. One that was like five, I think, that they've been trying to get in. And
yeah, we saw Angela at the Guild of Charlotte Artists, and you got name dropped there.
I did. It was not in my schedule to be able to be there.
Yeah,
Michael name dropped you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people from the GCA who got in this year.
Mm-hmm. There is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's cool.
Excellent. Huge achievement. Congratulations.
Yes. Congrats.
Thank you.
And
so happy for you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, with that, I just want to thank I want to thank our guests. If you want to check out their work, moderngoldfish.com. If you want to find us, we're BZ Furfur. You can find us at bzfurfur.com or on Instagram at bz_furfur. You can also find the podcast at pyrotoastytalks.com, on Instagram at pyrotoastytalks. If you want to buy a Pyro Toast Detox t-shirt and help keep the podcast free, go to pyrotoastdetox.com and click on the link for t-shirts. We will, I believe, make a new design now that says, oh God, I'm going to have to go listen through it again. Hot thing on wood.
I'm going to have to design that.
We'll have to replace the one that says pine sucks.
You have to keep pine it. Sucks. You know what it is? I think he's going to have to design.
We'll have to ask Brian to design it.
Yes.
You can also, if you want to talk with us or join the Pyro Toast Detox community, there's a link to our Discord. It's hosted over on the Burn Club, which is part of Woodburn Corner. You can find Woodburn Corner at woodburncorner.com. And if you want to find our friends, it's David and Renee. You can find them over at itsdavidandrenee.com or on Instagram at itsdavidandrenee. And lastly, we'd like to thank Lucas Luan, who is responsible for our theme music. Thank you, Lucas. He's a friend of ours over in the Burn Club Plus Discord as well. And with that, stay toasty.
Stay toasty.